This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of your views, because this is Open Line Friday. We had Dr. Corsi on Wednesday during my regular Open Line Wednesday, and so we thought we'd do an Open Line program this evening. So our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call if you have a question, a comment. We'd love to hear from you. But I thought maybe I'd just start out this evening talking about something I heard on the radio just a moment ago, that the Congressional Budget Office had estimated that over the next 4 years, the period of President Obama's first term, that the deficit spending, over and above, of course, the money that would ordinarily come in, the way of income, and then, of course, compare it with the money that's going to go out, the deficit would be about $9.3 trillion. President Obama, had suggested that the deficit would only be about $7 trillion, but the Congressional Budget Office said $9.3 trillion. Now, the supporters of President Obama say, look, this money that we're going to be putting out is going to be actually necessary. We've got to improve the health of the American people. We've got to produce something that's going to help the environment. We've got to help energy. And, of course, when we talk about the environment, while we're talking about, they want to, of course, control the amount of carbon dioxide put in the atmosphere by going along with these concepts that were laid out in the Kyoto Protocol, which requires America just to stop using fossil fuels. Anything, of course, that produces CO2, that would be wood burning, coal burning, natural gas burning, oil burning. And, of course, initially, while we'll cut back to 80% of what we were putting out in the year 1990, but eventually we're going to actually have to cut back 80% of our energy use back to 80% of what it was in 1990, which of course means the complete deindustrialization of America. In other words, basically they're going to have to massively increase the price of electricity. Certainly they're already planning on double the price of electricity, which has already doubled. Of course, when they deregulated electricity a few years ago, it was entirely a scam. There was no problem at that time. They deregulated electricity so they have an excuse to double the price. In some places here in California, to triple the price of electricity. And they did it under the guise of, well, we want to cut prices. I mean, you realize here in California, we're actually sometimes paying more for electricity there in other countries and in other states, adjacent states. What we want to do is bring in competition. And that's why we're going to deregulate electricity. Well, you can't deregulate a monopoly. And what they did is the prices of electricity here in California doubled and may even being in some areas tripled. They knew exactly what they were doing, but it is all part of this whole idea of deindustrializing the United States. You see, there really is a master plan, and you can read it if you doubt it. It's the Earth Charter, written by Mikhail Gorbachev, who hates America and hates freedom. He was the former dictator of Russia. By Marie Strong, who hates America and hates freedom. He's living over in China today. And certainly by Stephen Rockefeller, the son of Nelson Rockefeller, and he hates America and hates freedom. All of them were deeply involved in the cult. All of them, of course, were instrumental in writing the Earth Charter, which is to be the new Ten Commandments for the world. In fact, it's kept in something called the Ark of Hope, a Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. We'll be right back. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're talking about the fact that there is a plan to deindustrialize America. But, of course, they can't tell the American people that. They can't tell the American people that there is a plan to actually lower our living standards to that of the peasant in China or in Eastern Europe. Well, the people wouldn't vote for any politicians who told them the truth, so they have to talk in flowing terms. And when the President Obama, and I don't know how many of you saw him the other evening on the Jay Leno program, but he talked about when we get through this and we come out on the other side, we're going to be stronger and more productive than ever before. And maybe they haven't told President Obama the policies of the people that he selected to surround himself with, because, of course, 11 of his key advisors came from this small little group known as the Trilateral Commission. And their goal, of course, is to actually lower the living standards in America, to impoverish our people, to use the industrialization of the Third World to provide material benefits for everybody, and have people so involved in materialism they'll be unconcerned about freedom. Senator Barry Goldwater wrote a treatise on the Trilateral Commission in his book With No Apologies, and we suggest that everybody get that book and read it, because he tells how the purpose of the Trilateral Commission, and I remember the book was written in 1979, but he said the purpose of the Trilateral Commission is international, and its goal is to seize control of the financial and commercial interests, and talking really of the world, by seizing control of the political government of the United States. That comes from page 280 of the book, and he would be glad to send you the pages if you haven't seen them. Understand, there really are people, of course, who have a different agenda. And they have seized control of the political government of the United States. Certainly, there are only 87 members, Americans, in the North American chapter of the Trilateral Commission. 11 of them are on the Obama administration. Nine of them control the major financial institutions of this country. Another 10 control the major means of communication in this country. So basically a third of them, of course, that makes up a third of the entire North American contingent of the Trilateral Commission. They essentially control our government. They control the major banks, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Sydney Citigroup, which used to be the largest bank in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and certainly we're going to open line Friday. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I was simply pointing out the fact that there is a plan. The plan is to impoverish the American people. And, of course, it's laid out in the Earth Charter. It calls for equitable distribution of wealth within these nations and between nations. And the way you get equitable distribution of wealth between nations is you send the wealth of the American people to other countries. That's why we're sending our manufacturing to other countries. But even more than that, that's why they have this whole idea of carbon dioxide is a lethal gas. We have global warming. We've got to cut back on our use of fossil fuels, because they really want, of course, to limit our use of electricity, make it so expensive and difficult to get that you're not going to be able to get enough electricity out of wind or solar. They know that. But they don't want the American people to know that the real plan is to make electricity so expensive that the major factories will simply move offshore. President Obama has talked about how he disagrees with the idea that the major corporations, when they move offshore, get special tax breaks. But it'll be, I believe, a very cold day in Hades before he does anything to remedy that, because the men who surround him and control him, and I'm talking about his economic advisors, his Secretary of the Treasury, and the people in all of the key positions who surround him, are either members of the Trilateral Commission or very closely associated with it, and their loyalty is not to the United States. Their loyalty is to the internationalist dream of a new world order, a new world financial system, a new world currency, and, of course, a new world religion. Well, let's go to Mark, who's calling from Florence, Oregon. And, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Mark, go right ahead.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
I can tell. Dr. Stan, I was wondering, have you heard of the group called, the organization called Oath Keepers?
Yes, I have, and I'm certainly glad to know that it's out there. Would you like to tell our listeners what Oath Keepers is?
Yes, actually, Dr. Stan, I have basically what it is in a few sentences, and I also have 9 of, I believe, the 10. I missed one in transcribing it off a program. Alex Jones had the attorney on for Oath Keepers, and he's writing the legal documents of statement and protest of the governmental infringement on our constitutional rights. So they're getting right down to it, and it's essentially a group. It's an organization, a formal organization, fairly newly formed, I gather, of current and retired military and law enforcement members who refuse to do basically, as their, you might call their bylaws state, 10 different things, 9 of which, and they're brief. I could read them off to you if you'd like me to.
You go right ahead, because I think it's important for people to understand there are people within our military and with our police realize that, of course, we're moving towards a fascist dictatorship. The people who control both political parties really don't believe in the Constitution, and, of course, they want excuses to take away our weapons, to have everybody under surveillance, to be able to actually to utilize the concentration camps that are there. They're not imaginary. They're very real. Sure. Go ahead and read those off quickly, would you please, Mark?
Yes, and Dr. Stan, when I finish, it'll only take a minute to read these. I'd like to give you the website and the name of the lawyer so that you could contact him. He was interviewed on Alex Jones' show at the beginning of this week or the end of last week. I forget which, but he's a very lucid, very good interview, and he recognizes the existence of the FEMA concentration camps, for instance, and seems to be aware, and he's willing to be outspoken about these things that are going wrong in our country, and I think he reflects the organization that he represents.
Now, I think people should know that they do not actually keep the names of anybody who goes to their website, and you can get information, but they're not going to have a membership list because they don't want the government to be able to go around and get them, but they're people who agree philosophically with them. I think that they want a large number of our police officers to understand that their oath is to the Constitution, not to the ruling person in Washington, D.C., because that wasn't what America was about. America was all about individual freedom under God. And there are the 10th Amendment that limits what the people in Washington, D.C. can do, and the 9th Amendment does as well. And certainly for almost 150 years, everybody realized that the federal government was not to provide for the health and the education and the welfare of our people, and not to provide for them, because a government that can provide for the people to the cradle of the grave must be able to control them from the cradle of the grave. And any government that can provide whatever we need or want must be able to take everything we have. Go right ahead.
Yes, and Dr. Stan, these are all what orders given reflecting any of these 9 orders to do any of these things that are mentioned here.
All right, go right ahead and just list those. We do have some other people, but please go ahead and list them.
They consider these to be illegal orders. They will not obey any order to disarm the American people. They will not obey any order to conduct warrantless searches of U.S. citizens. They will not detain U.S. citizens as enemy combatants. They will not impose martial law. They will not obey, but rather they will impose themselves between the American citizenry and any federal or foreign forces which invade cities, townships, etc., in a martial law-like situation. They will not blockade American cities, and they say, actually in the bylaw, thus turning them into concentration camps. They will not force American citizens into internment camps. They will repel foreign troops that are on U.S. soil, period. They will not confiscate U.S. citizens' property, and they will not contribute or participate in the interference of the right of free speech and the right to assemble of U.S. citizens. And the website through which you can get the author in touch with the author, Dr. Stan, is very short, and his name is pretty short. Can I give them to you?
Go right ahead.
It's Oath Keepers. There's a dash in between there, I believe. Mm-hmm. Oath-Keepers.
And what's the name? What's his, the gentleman's
dot,
name?
Dot blogspot, mm-hmm. blog, B-L-O-G, spot, dot com.
Mm-hmm. All right, Vaughn, what's the gentleman's
okay.
name?
Okay, his name is Mr. Stuart Rhodes. That's R-H-O-D-E-S.
Is that S-T-U-A-R-T or S-T-E-W?
I believe it's S-T-U-A-R-T, but you should see his name on that website. I believe that's his blog spot.
All right, fine. God bless. Thanks very much,
God
Lawrence.
Bless,
I think it's a very important issue, and I think people have to understand that there really are people who hate freedom here. There have always been those who wanted to establish a dictatorship. In fact, there was an effort to establish a dictatorship back in the 1930s, about 1934. And there's a wonderful book written about it called The Plot to Seize the White House, and it was written certainly by, it goes to the background of the fact that they tried to get a Major General Smedley Butler, who was a very well-known Marine general at that time, to lead the effort to seize the White House. And then, of course, there was an effort during the Nixon administration, and there's a gentleman we've had a frequent guest on our program. He wrote a book called The New World Order, which we have, and he tells in that book how his father was actually a high government official during the Nixon administration, and President Nixon wanted to see if he had enough support to have a palace coup so he could not be impeached. People say it couldn't happen here, and I would like to ask why not, especially since this country has turned against God, and we've done every that sort of thing. We've taken God out of our schools, and God out of our, and prayer out of our schools, and the acknowledgement of God out of our schools, and certainly are we training our children that they come from the goo, and they just certainly have evolved into human beings, and human beings are not something special, and then we have to teach them some reason for self-esteem, because after all, if somebody said they went from the glue to the zoo to you, and certainly basically that's how it happened, and you're nothing special. Well, I think you're something special if you're a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God, and that's all I need for self-esteem. Under any circumstances, there really is a move towards a one-world dictatorship. And, of course, you can trace this to the writings of Cecil Rhodes and the writings of David Rockefeller and his whole idea of an international order and the organizations he controls, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, and the Council on Foreign Relations. And basically, they essentially are the invisible government of the United States. They've already set up the concentration camps. They gave Kellogg Brown and Root $385 million to build concentration camps. You can check this on the Internet, or I suggest you get our talk, the planned police state, and we have a syllabus that goes with that. That'll give you all the documentation. They spent $82 million to refurbish the Japanese concentration camps in preparation for putting American citizens into them. Of course, they're not going to tell people that. We've got a four-tape set on concentration camps, or we have the concentration camp special, where you'll hear the congressman actually talking about the plan in case of a national emergency. Suspend the Constitution and round up American citizens, and the efforts to bring this out at the congressional hearings, the Iran-Contra hearings, and everything done to prevent this from going on the record. The last thing they want is for the American people to know what's really going on. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. One of the reasons they engineered this phony financial crisis that is devastating the lives of so many people was to create the crisis, which down the line I believe they are going to intentionally and purposely and maliciously use in an effort to justify martial law. And I think this organization, Oath Keepers, is a great idea because, of course, it's drawing people's attention on what the real goal is, and that is the end of freedom in America. But there really are wealthy people who believe that they should be ruling over us. Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call. Well, right now, of course, we've got John on the line from Texas. Hi, John. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, when you started the program, you were talking about this $10 trillion deal.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets. A little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
What happened?
Well, he said that's what Obama said, and then he said the next day China came out saying that how China had loaned us all this money and how they were very concerned about their assets.
I think they should be. I mean, they've lent us probably, they have probably close to $1 trillion invested, not only in treasury bill, but in government bonds of one sort or another, and or certainly in corporate bonds. And I would be very concerned if I had that amount of money invested in the United States when it's very obvious that the leaders of this country intend to destroy the value of the currency. And I think that this last week, the premier of China came out and said, you know, you've got to start acting responsibly or we're not going to continue investing. And of course, they said, you got nothing to worry about. You can trust us. And if you believe that, you believe anything. The Chinese are very, very smart. Whether we agree with their form of government or not, we are totally dependent upon them for loans, because if they were to pull their money from our country, simply cash in their bonds or even stop buying new bonds, we have to borrow in the neighborhood of $3 billion every single day, and yet we're lending money all throughout the world, money we don't have. And the only way to do this, of course, is to simply print the money, and by so doing, why, we will Weimarize America. In other words, the same thing will happen to America that happened to the Weimar Republic. Go ahead, John.
Well, it kind of sounded like China was saying that, you know, here we did all this for you, and you want to tell us how to do our business. And really, we have leverage on you, you know.
That's absolutely true. They do have leverage on us, because if they cash in their bonds and the other countries quit lending to us and all that, those trillions of dollars that are out there around the world came back home, it would simply crash our economy overnight. And you'd one day wake up and realize that your money was worthless.
As far as the Oath Keeper thing, I remember whenever I was in the military, you know, the oath was to uphold all the laws, you know, of the Constitution and everything. And then it was to obey all lawful orders of your commanders.
I see. Well, their real oath is to not to our commanders, but to the Constitution. Let's hope that the members of the military and the police will remember that, and their loyalty will be to this ideals of our Constitution. Hey, God bless. Thanks very much, John. And let's go to Chester.
One thing I would like to say is that one guy that resigned, and whoever's running this stuff, you know, over in Iraq and everything, he refused to obey some of these orders Bush and Cheney wanted him to do, saying they were unlawful orders, you know. And I just thought that was a pretty good, interesting point.
Well, I wish we had, if they had 100,000 men who would do the same thing and refuse to carry out unlawful orders or participate in the imprisonment of innocent people or the torture of innocent people, why, of course, this whole house of cards would come down. Let's hope we have at least a few stout-hearted men out there. Good night. God bless, John. Let's go to Chester, calling from the San Lorenzo Valley. Hey, Chester, how are you doing?
Very good, Dr. Stan. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine.
Hey, I remember that old senator from way back when that used to say, $1 trillion here and $1 trillion here, and next thing you know, or there, and next thing you know, you got a lot of money.
Now, that was Edward Dirksen. Actually, the quotation was $1 million here, $1 million there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Yeah.
But I like to say $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there, and pretty soon you're talking about worthless money.
That's
what we've got to do. We've got to get people to understand they're intentionally destroying the value of our currency, which means they lose everything. But don't you worry about the very wealthy. They understand what's going on, and they're investing in things that will maintain their value. Anything else?
Yes, I was just kind of wondering, I guess that shows you the inflation. It went from $1 million to $1 trillion.
Right.
He was saying that. Another thing is that I remember another conservative writer from way back when that used to talk about a guy named Tom Anderson. You remember that guy?
Sure remember Tom. He was one of my favorite human beings.
Yeah, I remember a story he had about a bunch of wild hogs someplace down in the south there, and how they were easily controlled after
all you did was feed them. All you did was put out feed for them, and these ferocious hogs, you know, would come in every day to get the food.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, we'd put up one side of the pen, and then another side of the pen, and then another side of the pen, and they didn't even notice it. They were more interested in the food. And finally, when they put up the last side of the pen, as he said, you know, boy, did they really squeal. But now, of course, they're docile. They wait for us to provide for them every day. And then he went on to say, I can cage or pen any animal that will first become dependent on me. And that's what Barack Obama is trying to do today, get everybody dependent upon government. Oh, hang on there, Jim. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Oh, no, it's Chester.
Chester.
new.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Chester on the line from San Lorenzo Valley. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Chester, did you never have another question or comment?
No, I just was nice to see some of your things up on YouTube here and there, and that it's getting the words getting out. So, and also it's good that you have it on the radio or on the computer here on the show, so you can watch it at home.
Well, I'm glad you're listening, and please get everybody up there in San Lorenzo Valley listening to Chester.
All right.
Bye bye.
You take care.
Bye bye. That's an old friend of mine. Anyway, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I'm just going to ask Mike, who's on line three, to hang on while I go to Jeannie on line one. Then we'll get right back to Mike here. So let's see. Hi, Jeannie. You've been waiting patiently on the line. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. Thanks, Mike, for waiting. I went to a visioning workshop last night.
Oh, you did, visioning.
Very interesting, because it was on how they're going to tax us in California. I heard that they've kind of perfected this visioning process, and I was wondering, gosh, what are they going to be doing that's different? And it was very interesting, because before on the visioning workshops, we would write down our recommendations for certain areas that we wanted to improve in the local area. This happened to be on taxes, on finance and budget of California. And as we walked in, there's this large notepad standing there on the side, and there's a question on it. This is typical of the visioning workshops. It said, "What future do you want in California?" ? And people would come in and write comments on the large notepad, such as, "We're struggling for social justice. We want a greater sense of community." But as we sat down, there were like little keypads, like a controller on the chair. And these were actually a wireless that went to a computer in the room, so when we voted, we would have an automatic feedback on a huge screen of what percentage was voting for what. So they perfected it where we have a feedback now instantaneously. Before, we were only writing on a paper and handing in our comments.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Jeannie, as we bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's Open Line Friday. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We have Jeannie calling from Aptos. She went to a visioning meeting last night. These visioning meetings, of course, are these planned meetings with a facilitator where you get a lot of people in, supposedly, because you want to hear what they have to say, but really to condition their minds to go along with the agenda. And the agenda, really, of course, here in California, is to have a new constitution, to take away propositions 13, to expand the role of government in our lives and the control of government over every aspect of our existence. Jeannie was just simply talking about how when she went into the room, they had a great big placard there on one side. You were supposed to write down what you really wanted for California. And then you'd go to your seat, and there'd be a little electronic button there so you could vote, on various issues. So it would have instant feedback on how the people felt. And of course, the whole idea is to condition the minds of the people to go along with the agenda. This is how you control people, and you can convince them that these ideas are their ideas. Well, go ahead, Jeannie.
Well, the name of the organization is called California Forward, and it's a touring roadshow that is going throughout California. So who's ever listening in California, and I'm sure they're doing it in other states too, is they'll be coming to your town, and the people that hosted this, they took in Keeley, who is our elected treasurer of Santa Cruz County. He was actually the one that spoke the most. And then Monning, who's in the assembly of California also spoke a little bit, just a little bit, and then he left.
All right, what is the basic theme? What are they trying to do?
Well, there are actually three things they're concentrating on, and this is what Keeley said. We want to bring this vision into reality.
Well, okay, so
the budget reforms, revenue options, that's where they're going to get the money, and structure of state and local relationship. Now, this is important because the county is a political subdivision of the state, and they have to go by what the state does and votes for. What I feel is very important in the future, if they have a constitutional convention, they want to take the county away from that political subdivision and go into regional government.
Well, I think, of course, anything that these people would want to do would be bad for us. They want to restructure government, and you can be sure the one thing they really want is to take away our freedom and to tax away our property.
Well, they want to get rid of the two-thirds vote.
Right.
And they actually said there's only three states that have it now, California, Arkansas, and Rhode Island.
And of course, that's what protects us from confiscatory taxation. And they want to be able to tax us for everything we have.
They want to bring it down to 55%.
Right. Well, of course, the worst thing we could do would be go for that. Do you have another point or two you'd like to make? Jane, go ahead.
They want to do carbon tax on CO2. Doesn't that conform with the United Nations? Any user tax. And Keeley said, our treasurer of Santa Cruz County said, now, this is a fee. This is not a tax. And he said that three times.
And it's a fee. It's not a tax, as if there's some sort of a difference. And the probably next thing they want to tell you, it's all voluntary. Okay, fine. Anything else, Jeannie, before we go?
No, it was very interesting, but I wanted to put that out.
All right. I appreciate so much you letting us know. Did you get some good videos?
I did, and also I want to mention Community TV filmed all the presentation, and they should have it on the community channel in Santa Cruz, so I'm going to be getting a tape of that.
All right, fine. You keep me posted, Jeannie. God bless. Thanks for going. And let's go to Mike, who's been waiting patiently on the line. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Let me point out, ladies and gentlemen, that these people are very well organized. We've known Mr. Keeley for many years. He's certainly a professional, a politician. His job is to control the local community. Going along with that slogan, think globally but act locally. And, of course, since they control the local newspaper, they always have, and there really is no organized effort. They control both the Republican and the Democrat parties. And so there really is no organized opposition to them. Every organization that's tried to organize an opposition, they've infiltrated and taken over. It's all about power. But I'm sure you have a similar organization in your community as well. Again, the number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Mike, did you have a question or comment?
Comment, Stan, if I may, regarding the Oath Keepers, a tidbit they might find useful for their cause. I'd like to quote, if I may, the words of arch criminal Dick Cheney, spoken on May 26, 2007, in his speech to the graduates of West Point, the Army Academy on the Hudson River, which happens to be just across from the old Rockefeller family estate. Can I read you to you what he said to them?
You go right
regarding
ahead.
The military oath. He said, on your first day of Army life, each one of you raised your right hand and took an oath, and you will swear again today to defend the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
But of course, that's not the oath. It says the American Constitution against the, is not the United States.
I'd like to finish. He said, that is your vow. That is the business you're in. Now, could I just read the oath itself? The way
you go right ahead, Mike. I think that's a very important distinction. Go ahead.
Yeah. Here's the oath. It goes, I, and you insert your name. Having been appointed A, and you insert your rank, And the United States Army, under the conditions indicated in this document, do accept such appointment and do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God.
And I think that is really a very important distinction. You do not swear allegiance to the United States, but to the United States Constitution. And, of course, Mr. Cheney, being a member of the Trial Outer Commission, or having been a member of the Trial Outer Commission, which is a subversive organization, as is the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers, they are subversive organizations, but nobody has the courage to say that. They would not want people, of course, to swear an oath to the Constitution, but rather to the United States, which, of course, he and his confreres control. Because the purpose of the Trilateral Commission was to seize political control of the government of the United States, according to Barry Goldwater on page 280 of his book, With No Apologies. It's such a shame everybody doesn't read that and understand we have subversive elements at the highest levels of our government who hate the Constitution, who hate freedom, and believe we should have an elite group that rules the world. Anything else, Mike?
Well, I'd just like to make it very clear that the Vice President, the then Vice President of the United States, attempted to change in the minds of these graduating Army cadets at West Point on that day, like I said, May 26, 2007. You can find this on the Internet. He attempted to change in their minds their oath that they would defend the United States in all of its subversive, criminal, imperial causes around the world for world domination, which really are not the United States' cause. They are the trilateral, as you say so often, Stan. This is not the United States. This is another governing entity that originates from what's actually known as the Empire State of New York.
Right.
They call themselves the Empire State. I so long in my life wondered why it was called the Empire State.
Well, I'm still guessing,
but I think I know.
Right.
But narrow it down to the island of Manhattan between the East River and the Hudson River. There's an island.
Well, I would even narrow it down a little bit more. I would say that the location is at 58 East 68th Street in New York City, New York. The Harold Pratt House, of the home of the Council on Foreign Relations, which was organized as a front for the Roundtable Group, and you'll find that on page 952 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And the Roundtable was simply a front for a front for the organized secret society. It was created by Cecil Rhodes, and until people understand there really are secret societies and covert organizations out there that run the world, why, nothing's going to change. Hopefully the people will find out before they've succeeded in destroying the value of our currency and enslaving our people. Anything else to say, Mike?
Enough for now, Sam.
All right, God bless, and bye. But let's go to Mario, who's calling from Flint, Michigan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And hi, is this Mario?
This is Mario.
Hi, Mario. Go right ahead.
I have a question about there seems to be two conflicting views in the media about what the force that got the ball rolling in our current economic crises really was. And my question is, it seems that there's a general agreement that what actually got the ball rolling here was a glut in the sale, a national glut in the sale of subprime mortgages. But there's two conflicting views in that among conservative commentators, they say that most of the subprime loans that were made that defaulted were because of quotas that were mandated by Congress in the 1990s, and that essentially forced banks to make these loans to people who couldn't pay them back, and it was inevitable that they would fail. Now, but it seems that there's a conflicting view that it's disingenuous to blame the federal mandates the federal mandate to make these subprime loans, because the ones that were covered under those terms were only a very small percentage of the subprime loans that have been made since that time, in the mid-90s until the present time, and that the vast majority, or at least a sizable majority, of subprime loans that were made since that time were made by banking institutions that weren't covered under those terms and were under no federal coercion or under quotas to make them.
All right. I think go ahead. So you want to know. My
question is just simply, do you have an understanding of that particular facet of the banking system? Do you have any insight into that?
Sure, I do. First of all, you have to understand that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were organized back in the 1930s under the Roosevelt administration to facilitate making home loans available to people. They hold somewhere around 40% of the home loans here in the United States, and then you get your FHA and other government-mediated organizations that offer home loans, and then, of course, you've got a lot of private corporations that offer home loans. Now, certainly Congress passed legislation in 1977, and then again in 1999 to encourage, or really basically by 1999, to force Fannie Mae and other institutions, banking institutions, to have a certain percentage of their loans made to minority groups, and of course they're basically talking about lower income groups that really couldn't afford their homes. So Fannie Mae was only too happy to do that. They were a quasi-government operation. Their officials were making tremendous amounts of money, certainly through their stocks and through their options and their bonuses. And Fannie Mae fell into line very, very quickly, starting making subprime mortgages that they never should have, you know, by logic, because these are obviously loans made to people who never would be able to pay them back. Thomas Friedman, and we use this example in my newsletter, Thomas Friedman, writing in the New York Times, talked about the fellow who's making $14,000 a year, who is sold a house worth $750,000, which he would never be able to pay for. He's given nothing down and no payments for 2 years. They then, of course, have a mortgage on that house. They sell that mortgage to a corporation that bundles them, gets a AAA rating from Moody's and Standard & Poor, and then gets somebody to write a derivative contract on it, some big corporation like Goldman Sachs or like AIG, and then they sell this to investors throughout the world. But many of the other corporations, many of the other companies, lending companies, mortgage companies, did exactly the same thing as Fannie Mae was. And Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae was... Go ahead.
Well, it seems that I read one article where they said that only a small percentage of the subprime mortgages made since that law was passed in 1999 were actually covered under the terms of that law. They covered only a certain type of banking institution
No, and they were all got in on this. Maybe they weren't necessarily forced to by law, but certainly there was no restrictions. There are ordinarily restrictions placed by government on predatory lending practices. What they would do is they would say, well, we'll give you a loan, but nothing down, or you put down 5%, and you don't have to make any payments for 2 years. Or certainly I had one friend who actually purchased a house. They gave him $25,000 to purchase the house. Then, of course, they got phony evaluations, assessments, or values on the houses, and they would, of course, sell these houses, which were valued far more than they were really worth. And this whole thing took off, and a lot of people made a lot of money. So there was a tremendous greed factor in that. But the state attorney generals realized what was happening. They all wanted to intervene. They were not allowed to by the Bush administration. And when Elliot Spitzer wrote a story telling this and appeared in the Washington Post on the 18th of February last year, within 3 weeks, the FBI had leaked a story of his involvement with a prostitute to punish him for letting the American people know that the administration had blocked efforts to stop this. Hold on. Go right ahead. So basically, they knew it was going on, and they would not allow the state attorney generals or anyone else to intervene. Not only that, but I think...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
to subscribe to our newsletter. Our telephone number is 1-888-544-8927. We have so many numbers to keep, but 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But if you can't help us, you're not in a position to, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can read our newsletter going back to, into the 1990s, where you can actually listen to our radio programs live on satellite feed 9 hours a day, the archive programs, the MP3 programs, the blog programs, and share them with other people. And then, of course, you can watch the DVDs we have. You can watch the section on other DVDs. Excellent. Links to YouTube and other things we think are important for you to have access to. So go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and encourage others to listen to our programs, because that's how we've built up a listening audience, not only all across America, but all across the world. Now, if you want to understand what's really going on financially, you have to understand history, because those who don't understand where we came from certainly don't know where we're going. But they don't understand that the history is prologue. History is the prologue to the future. The past is prologue to the future. And we have an excellent book written back in 1889 by Mr. Wahlberg called The Coming Battle, telling how the banks had repeatedly created the economic crises all during the 19th century. They're doing it today. This whole economic crisis is simply engineered, but they can't tell the American people that they're losing their jobs. Factories are closing down. People are losing their homes. The stock market has been manipulated. They've lost their life savings and their pensions. They can't tell the American people this is all engineered. But what you're seeing is like deja vu all over again. That's why the book written in 1889 by Mr. Wahlberg called The Coming Battle is so important. That's The Coming Battle. And you can, of course, get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. And remember, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And then, of course, we also suggest that you get the book, The Money Creators, written in 1935 by Gertrude Coogan. Coogan, C-O-O-G-A-N. And Gertrude actually wrote about the Great Depression, which was intentionally created by the Federal Reserve System, by contracting the money supply. If they'd just done nothing, everything would have been fine. But every time the economy started to recover, they contracted it further. And certainly there was plenty of money out there. There was no reason for the depression, other than the fact that the banks wanted it, and that's how they were going to get people's homes and people's factories and people's farms, and that's the same game that played over and over again. But there was no reason for the Great Depression, other than the fact that the Federal Reserve Board, at the behest of the major banks that control it, simply used it as a means of raping and pillaging our society. The book, The Money Creators, written in 1935. Certainly you'll want to get the excellent book entitled The Creature from Jekyll Island, written by our good friend Ed Griffin. You'll want to get the book. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because it is a conspiracy. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank, like the central banks all throughout the world are privately owned. And the people who control those banks, of course, are working to bring about a world feudalistic system. But certainly you're not going to read that any place. You need to get my little pamphlet called The History of Money. And we simply quote from the writings of Professor Carol Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor. And he explains to you what this is all about and where it is all going to lead. And of course, the book is so important. It was suppressed for many years, but is available now through Radio Liberty. And the last book, of course, would suggest you get Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time by Professor Quigley. It was important enough that they did suppress it. You want to get the book, The Fiat Money, Inflation in France. And then, of course, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who was formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now, of course, he writes a blog, and he writes books, and of course, he raises six children, but he's a regular guest here at Radio Liberty. Always a pleasure to have William here for the last hour on Friday. William, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you.
Well, what are we going to talk about this evening?
I think what we're going to have to do is take sort of a tour of the horizon, concentrate on a couple of things that have been left dangling while we've been contemplating the unraveling of the world financial system, which, of course, is the backdrop for everything that's going on. It's worthwhile every once in a while to take a step back and reiterate and amplify a couple of points about the nature of the power elite that is the core of architects, if you will, of our current distress. I don't know if you'd seen this, Dr. Stan, or if you discussed this before, but about a month ago, a little more than a month ago, I think, there was a speech at the 45th Munich Conference on Security Policy by James L. Jones, who was the National Security Advisor for the Obama administration. The first paragraph of that is quite interesting. At the beginning of this conference, there was this long and somewhat lachrymose tribute to Henry Kissinger. Mr. Kissinger is perhaps the individual most conspicuously responsible for America's diplomatic decline over the last half century or so. And so it's quite an interesting thing you'd have this long and sentimental tribute to Henry Kissinger.
Well, could I just intervene here for just a moment? You're speaking of General James Jones, and of course here is a member of the Trilateral Commission who is giving a eulogy to another member of the Trilateral Commission. Remember, there's only 87 Americans who are members of the North American group of the Trilateral Commission. So unless you, of course, have a program, you can't understand who these people are.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we offer a program. It's called the Membership List of the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's a syllabus that has the membership list of the Trilateral Commission, their membership list, the CFR, the Bilderbergers, the Group of 30, and a little bit about each one of these subversive organizations. That's the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll find a General Jones, a name there. Of course, little wonder he would be praising another member of the Trilateral Commission, Henry Kissinger. Go right ahead.
Exactly. The really interesting thing, though, is that the very first paragraph of this speech underscores the point that you were just making, Dr. Stan, regarding the way that there is this organized and definable brotherhood or fraternity or network, however you want to characterize it. Criminal syndicate is one of my favorite descriptions. But here's how he proceeded at the beginning of his speech, and I quote, "Thank you for that wonderful tribute to Henry Kissinger yesterday. Congratulations. As the most recent National Security Advisor of the United States, I take my daily orders from Dr. Kissinger, filtered down through General Brent Scowcroft and Sandy Berger, who is also here. We have a chain of command of the National Security Council that exists today." That was the opening paragraph of that speech. Some people might say he was being jocose, but I really don't think he was. I don't think that he would commit himself publicly and in print to talking about this chain of command that runs through these very conspicuous members of the CFR and Trilateral Commission, unless he were telling the documentable truth. And also, it's quite interesting that that speech is available, very prominently posted at the website of the Council on Foreign Relations. So it is important to recognize that there is a definable power elite here. If you take a look at all the major players in the current bailout, the ongoing plunder fest, this orgy of criminal plunder that's going on for the benefit of these palpably, culpably corrupt, criminally corrupt.
Hold those thoughts. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, William, go right ahead.
If you take a look at all the major players, the corporate players, the officials that are in positions of corporate responsibility in these banks, If you take a look at the report of the Council on Foreign Relations, where they have the membership roster, almost all the really important and conspicuous people are listed in the roster, the membership roster of the Council on Foreign Relations. If you take a look at the corporate members of the CFR, that is to say, those businesses that donate to the CFR and are part of the sponsoring donor base for that organization, you see that the banks that are being bailed out are all corporate members of the CFR. You take a look at the policymakers in the Treasury Department and the policymakers in the Federal Reserve. They're all members of the CFR. You're basically watching in real time the ongoing theft of our country through the United States government by people who are members of this definable semi-submerged power elite. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This is something that is happening in real time that's documentable in the open source press. All you have to do is compare what's going on in the open source press to the membership rosters of the various organizations and pay careful attention to what is being said and who's being said it, and you can see that this is a very real thing. This, for a long time, semi-obscured criminal network is now overtly running the political structure of our country and not really doing a whole lot by way of concealing what they're doing to our economy and to the instruments of representative government. It's really quite a remarkable development. We've come to the point where we're seeing what Alice Bailey would describe as the externalization of the occultic hierarchy. They're being very, very blatant about it. And it's by no means unique in history, but it's something that I think in terms of degree is perhaps uniquely brazen. And so I think that's the most important thing to start with this evening, is to recognize that this is the sort of thing that's not just happening as the natural progression of spontaneous corruption of our polity. I mean, there are plenty of ways that every political system succumbs to corruption. You're not talking about a nation that has drifted into trouble. You're talking about a nation that's been hijacked by this criminal network. Now, by way of the cost that we're talking about, there's an item from the wire services today. The headline is, Obama's budget could bring $9.3 trillion in deficits. President Barack Obama's budget would produce $9.3 trillion in deficits over the next decade, more than four times the deficits of Republican George W. Bush's presidency, congressional auditors said Friday. And those are figures produced by the Congressional Budget Office. They're talking about the fact that the first budget by Mr. Obama would be much, much bigger in terms of the deficit than what Mr. Obama predicted.
Well, that thought will be back here. And our guest, of course, is Mr. William Grigg. He's simply talking about that at a recent meeting by, of course, General James L. Jones, who's the National Security Advisor to President Obama, had given a glowing testimony in tribute to Henry Kissinger. Now, I pointed out that both of them come from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations, and then, of course, they brought up the name of Mr. Brent Scowcroft. He comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. All of them, of course, the Trilateral Commission. All of them come from the Trilateral Commission. All of them come from the Council on Foreign Relations. There is a ruling elite that controls our government, and they are a subversive organization because, of course, the goal is a one-world government and the destruction of our sovereignty, and that's why they've collapsed our economy, and it's going to get worse and worse until chaos reigns and the people will be willing to give up their freedom. And those who won't will be carted away to concentration camps. But William was just talking about the recent report by the Congressional Budget Office saying that the estimate of the coming natural deficit, in other words, the difference between what the government takes in and what it puts out, has been underestimated by Barack Obama's regime. Surprise, surprise. Instead of being about $7 trillion over the next 4 years, it'll be $9.3 trillion, is that correct?
$9.3 trillion is the estimate here on the basis of the projections and the revenue estimates and the spending projections that the Congressional Budget Office was dealing with. $9.3 trillion. And the first year's deficit apparently would be $2.3 trillion, which is quite a bit more than the already terrifying estimate that the Obama administration had presented for public inspection. And this wire service piece continues by saying that if these figures prove to be accurate, they inevitably raise the prospect that Obama and his Democratic allies controlling Congress would have to consider raising taxes after the recession ends or else pare back his agenda. Well, they're not going to be able to raise taxes after the recession ends because of the rate they're spending money. This recession, which is, of course, ripening into an outright depression, is going to be a decades-long proposition. Heaven only knows how long it's going to last or how deep it will go. But the point is that it would last far longer than the 8 years of an Obama administration if he's elected to a second term, which is by no means a certainty. And so they wouldn't have to worry about raising taxes after the recession. They would probably start raising taxes during the middle of a recession or depression, which is a horrible thing to do. That's what, of course, Mr. Hoover did in 1932. After doing what he could to prevent the necessary liquidation of all the overbuilt financial and manufacturing interests that were affected by the Depression once the stock market crashed and the economy began to contract in 1929-1930, and the country started into the Depression, which is, of course, a natural outgrowth of an inflationary boom, Mr. Hoover, rather than permitting liquidation, did what he could to prevent it. And then in 1932, as the deficit began to raise, began to deepen, I should say, Mr. Hoover raised taxes. He rammed through a tax increase, basically by browbeating Congress on the subject, and that really blew out the bottom of the economy. And that was one of the things that gave FDR an opportunity in 1932 to run to the right of the Republicans. It's not well remembered that when FDR ran, in 1932, the platform on which he ran was actually relatively conservative, much more conservative than any recent Republican platform in terms of economics. It called for, among other things, a radical reduction in the amount of federal spending. It extolled the virtues of solid money, gold and silver, as the basis of a sound economy. It promoted the idea of free trade as opposed to protectionism, genuine free trade, not the mercantilist type of trade that we have today, which is actually a sort of stalking horse for consolidation of economic blocks that have nothing to do with free trade. We have internationally managed trade now, international mercantilist trade, not true free trade. But all these things were put into the Democratic platform of 1932 so as to rally the public against the Republicans, who were seen quite plausibly as a squanderlust party that was standing in the path impeding economic recovery. But, of course, when FDR was elected and inaugurated in March of 1933, the very first thing he did was throw out everything that the platform had said by way of repudiating Republican socialism. They started building the Democratic variety. Well, we've got the same thing going on right now. The Bush administration, for 8 years, did everything it could to set new records in public profligacy. And one of the most important things they did took place 6 years ago today, which was the beginning of this completely unnecessary and utterly counterproductive and disastrous invasion and occupation of Iraq. The costs of that one venture alone, of course, are going to run into the trillions. But heaven only knows how much it's going to cost by the time we get out of Iraq, if ever we do. Eventually we would have to, because we're going to run out of money to sustain the occupation. And what haunts my sleep, and I know this is something that we've discussed before, Dr. Stan, and I would assume that you have similar worries and misgivings, is the prospect that we will not be able to get the army, get our expeditionary force out of the Persian Gulf, that it'll be cut off, it'll be isolated, and then hacked to death, which is a very real possibility. I mean, this is the sort of thing that happened at the turn of the Christian era in the Roman Empire, where they found themselves often overextended and their supply lines became too long. There's that famous despairing cry, I believe, by the Emperor Augustus, Cyrus, give me back my legions, after they were cut to pieces in Germany right at the turn of the Christian era, the birth of Christ. And we're in a position now where we could see our expeditionary force in the Persian Gulf completely surrounded and annihilated. And this is the sort of thing that was set in motion 6 years ago when the Bush administration consciously manipulated the public using intelligence that they knew to be false, misleading, or outright mendacious regarding the supposed threat posed by Saddam Hussein. Of course, was in a box at the time. He was not even the commander of his own country. There were two no-fly zones in Iraq, one of which protected al-Qaeda elements in the northern part of the country. And so he wasn't even the master of his own country. He didn't have an air force. He didn't have a navy. He didn't have ballistic missile capability. He had Scud missiles that were fired out of the back of flatbed trucks. He was not, by no means a threat even to the region at large. He was a threat to his own population, which is why he was installed by the CIA decades before. But we got involved in this terrible undertaking, and that alone has been enough to push our economy over the cliff. This is something that's not going to end anytime soon. Mr. Obama has talked about the idea of withdrawing some elements of our military beyond the horizon, but keeping them in the region, which is a really good recipe for all kinds of trouble.
But, of course, the thing that really disturbs me is the fact he's going to expand the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And nobody will tell me why we're fighting in Afghanistan, because we funded the Taliban. All you have to do is read George Bush's speech on the 20th or 21st of September 2001, and he will tell you that America was the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan at the time. That was the Taliban. We were funding the Taliban, so why are we fighting the Taliban? They're certainly there. We don't agree with their religious beliefs, but they're certainly there no worse than Saudi Arabia's as far as the treatment of women or beheading people or the ruthless oppression of the masses. So why are we fighting in Afghanistan today? And nobody can tell you, but we've got to keep fighting there.
Yeah, it's interesting. In July of 2001 as well, you can go back and pull the newspaper clips about how the Taliban was receiving all kinds of funding from the federal government, the administration of George W. Bush, for counter-narcotics undertakings. And so now we're in a position where we're not only fighting the Taliban, but we're also fighting the Afghan poppy growers, the opium growers. You know, you're fighting those who would suppress the opium trade, you're fighting those who would promote the opium trade. And as a result, of course, what happens is the price of narcotics goes up. It's a price support program, really, for the drug syndicates, and that's a large source of undifferentiated and unaccountable funding that's used for all kinds of mischievous purposes by all kinds of three-letter organizations, our own CIA being conspicuous in that community. And the same thing's happening with respect to what's going on in Mexico as well, but that's another subject. Obama has also, of course, been very militant in his approach toward Pakistan, and he stepped up, his administration rather, probably autonomously. I don't know how much of this you can say reflects Mr. Obama's actual policy preferences, because like every other president, he's to a significant extent a puppet. He's an appendage of the oligarchical clique that thrust him into power, so who knows what he would prefer to do if he had his druthers. But on his watch and under his supervision and with his public approval, the attacks by the use of Predator drones and other unmanned strike aircraft have been stepped up within the boundaries of Pakistan. Pakistan is a nominal ally in the fight against Al-Qaeda. So we're fighting Al-Qaeda, we're fighting the Taliban. The Taliban was supported by our chief ally in the region. Our chief ally in the region is now receiving routine cross-border raids and air attacks from American military assets in the region. It's the most perfect lunacy. But if you understand that the real purpose of foreign policy with respect to warfare in any case is simply to maintain the war economy, because that's a major element of the international financial structure that this oligarchy runs, then a lot of this otherwise inexplicable lunacy starts to make some kind of sense. I mean, you want to make sure that the conflict or the threat of conflict is perpetuated, because that's one way that you can maintain this corporate socialist economy. If there weren't demand for this type of this type of funding, this type of activity, then that pillar would be kicked out from beneath the edifice of corporate socialism. And a lot of these entities that are being bailed out right now, and a lot of the entities that are receiving stimulus funds, are very big players in this whole cynical game.
Well, I think the real danger is, of course, we are running out of money. We're running out of people who lend us money. The Chinese have recently said that they're very concerned about the money they're lending us. Of course, the only other solution is simply to start printing money as we move then away from a free society into a situation that exists in the Weimar Republic. Ladies and gentlemen, this $9.3 trillion is going to have to be largely monetized. And, of course, that could very well be the death knell for our currency, which means, of course, our people will be impoverished. This is not happening by accident. They are very, very smart people. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know what they're doing. We cannot continue financing things we can't afford. Well, William, go ahead and pick up the story.
On the subject of the monetization of our debts and the so-called monetization of our deficit-fueled budgets and spending, it's interesting how over the last 72 hours, give or take, the Federal Reserve announced that it had pumped another $1.2 trillion or more, we don't know exactly how much, into the money supply. There was a really interesting interview on National Public Radio of all the unlikely places, I believe yesterday, featuring a Wall Street Journal reporter whose name eludes me right now, who's writing a book on the Federal Reserve. And he made an interesting point. He said that the Federal Reserve no longer prints money. It doesn't even bother to print money when you're talking about increments that large. It simply uses electronic transfers. It digitizes money. It literally conjures them out of the ether, and they never take material, tangible form. They exist purely in the virtual realm as electronic impulses that are recorded in the accounts of the banks that are attached to the so-called open market committee. And as a result, you have this huge infusion of inflation that never takes tangible form and is largely ignored precisely because the printing presses don't roll and there's no physical growth to the actual money supply. But every time they do that, and this is something I never tire of telling people because it is so outrageous, every time the Federal Reserve does that, it's as if they had reached into your savings accounts or into your pension funds or your other investments and just stolen a corresponding portion amount of that money, the value of that money, out of your accounts or out of your savings and investments. And it does this without any kind of accountability. Greenspan, the former commissar of the Fed, was on the Lehr NewsHour, I believe, or it's called the Jim Lehr NewsHour now. They used to call it the McNeil Lehr Report. But he was on PBS not too terribly long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and made a point of saying that the Federal Reserve is not accountable to anybody. It has no political mechanism of accountability. It's not accountable to Congress. It's really not beholden to anybody under heaven. And so they can steal the value of what we earn and save and do so to the benefit of their corrupt clientele without any kind of retribution, any kind of potential retaliation or check. So we had $1.2 trillion created by the Federal Reserve just in the last couple of days. Now, Mr. Geithner, the head of the Treasury Department, who is the de facto economic dictator of the United States, has announced that they're going back for another $1 trillion in so-called TARP funds. And that's probably going to happen over the next few days, the next couple of, the next week or so. And bear in mind that because of the way that this TARP measure was put in place last September, Congress no longer has a role in deciding whether or not that money will be appropriated. That resides purely at the discretion of the Treasury Secretary, who works in collaboration with the Federal Reserve when they decide that they're going to lavish money on these various institutions to receive the bailout funds.
So don't forget about the TALF funds either.
That's
another, $1 trillion they're going to put out trying to get, various companies to begin buying up, of course, these collateralized debt obligations and asset-backed securities and structured investment vehicles. So we lend the money to these companies so they can buy these, and then we guarantee them so against a loss, which is really the greatest scam in the world.
Yeah.
Those are the TALF funds in contrast to the TARP funds.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you figure if they use all these acronyms, nobody will understand what they're doing. And most people surely don't. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We were just talking about the TARP funds. We were talking about the TALF funds. We were talking about, of course, all of these various scams that they have out there that are going, of course, to destroy the value of our currency. Ladies and gentlemen, I plead with you, take the action that you need now to protect yourself, because most people are going to be impoverished before this is over.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
When you talk about all these multifarious ways that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department are conjuring money out of the ether and spending it for various bailouts, it really does become a scene of a perfect pandemonium for anybody who has a rational sense of how an economy should be managed. Which is to say, an economy should be managed only to the extent that contracts are enforced and the currency remains sound. That's basically the end of the government's responsibility in the matter. The government was supposed to coin money and regulate the value thereof. In other words, all it was supposed to do is make sure that the medium of exchange remained whole and to see that contracts were duly enforced, that neither force, improper illegal force nor fraud was used in any of these business dealings. That's pretty much the extent that the government has any constitutional role in the economy. And now we have the government adulterating the currency every single day in ways that the Founding Fathers simply couldn't have imagined. And all they're doing is they're working on behalf of those who perpetrate fraud. And they're using the force of government to confiscate the wealth of those of us who honestly earn what we earn, and to do this to the benefit of those who are excelling at politically protected fraud. That is the chief undertaking, almost the sole undertaking of the government right now, the government that rules us. And this lunacy has not gone unnoticed beyond the shores of the United States. As a matter of fact, people outside the United States are probably better informed than people within the United States about what's happening. In witness whereof, I want to mention an article that appeared yesterday in the National Post in Canada. The National Post is a newspaper of somewhat neoconservative leanings with respect to foreign policy, but every once in a while, in spite of that tendency, you'll see something worthwhile, such as this article by contributing writer Terrence Corcoran. And I'm quoting now from this article yesterday. The headline is This the End of America? The U.S. lawmaking is riddled with slapdash incompetence and gamesmanship. Helicopter Ben Bernanke's Federal Reserve is dropping trillions of fresh paper dollars on the world economy. The President of the United States is cracking jokes on late-night comedy shows. His energy minister, that is to say the Secretary of Energy, is threatening a trade war over carbon emissions. His Treasury Secretary is dithering over a banking reform program amid rising concerns over his competence. And a monumentally dysfunctional U.S. Congress is launching another public jihad against corporations and bankers. As an aghast world from China to Chicago to Chihuahua watches, the circus-like U.S. political system seems to be declining into near chaos. Through it all, stock and financial markets are paralyzed. The more the policy regime does, the worse the outlook gets. The multi-ringed spectacle raises a disturbing question to many minds. Is this the end of America? By way of illustrating what's going on in the economy, and this is one of the limitations of radio that constantly rankle me, there's a chart here which talks about the monetary base, and it's really an interesting little artifact, and I know you've seen it, but starting in 2008, it literally took a vertical, a right angle climb, the famous hockey stick type of a climb, off of a rising base that had remained somewhat modest. Disturbingly, I mean, the inflation rate was disturbing through the 1980s. If you take a look at what happened starting in about year 2000, there's an ascending about, I'd say, 45-degree increase. But starting in 2008, it literally took off vertical, perpendicular to what had been the trend line. And that's, of course, what started to happen last year when the Federal Reserve got involved in bailing out all of these fraud-riddled, corrupt financial institutions and nationalizing Fannie and Freddie and AIG and effectively nationalizing a handful of banks every week, taking these banks into receivership and then basically operated under the aegis of the federal government, Washington Mutual et al. But that's the sort of a trend line that, in terms of monetary inflation, literally prefigures hyperinflation, whether that hyperinflation takes the form of hyperinflation in prices, it's when that will happen, is something that neither you nor I would really be able to say with any authority, but there's no way that the people who are holding the paper on American debt are going to allow Washington, the Federal Reserve, simply to inflate away the value of those bonds. They're going to start dumping those bonds. As a matter of fact, there was a very dramatic slowdown as of December of last year in the purchase of American debt paper, which is why the Federal Reserve now is simply buying up Treasury bonds.
Well, I think it's really very interesting that the head, you know, the premier of China just this last week expressed concern about our currency and its stability. And, of course, if they quit buying our bonds, we're in real trouble.
Yeah.
God bless America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess William Grigg will right ahead with him.
It's by no means coincidental, I think, that we see the Federal Reserve now, as of a couple of days ago, taking about $750 billion, I think, out of that $1.2 trillion, or however large the increment was. We won't know for sure until probably several weeks from now exactly how much so-called money they injected into the money supply. But about three-quarters of that figure was used to buy up treasury bonds, long-term treasury bonds. And that's a very, very dangerous game they're in. I mean, literally, it's like two people who have nothing in their checking account covering each other's debts. And what's going to happen is that, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, the people who are our main foreign creditors, China is, of course, the most most important one, because they're the ones who are the holders of over $1 trillion in our debt, and they're the ones who have every reason to try to bring about a decline, if not an outright collapse of our economy, because after all, we are supporting them. There's a certain interdependence there economically that's by no means a healthy relationship, but it is there. But they're the ones who are the chief strategic rival to the United States, or at least they perceive themselves to be such. And when you have yourself in a relationship with your chief strategic rival, where they're the ones who are your biggest creditor, that's not a good relationship to be in. And they're not going to allow the Fed and the Treasury Department to continue with the type of chicanery that they've been involved in, and simply see the value of the dollar holdings evaporate. And so it's going to start feeding on itself very, very quickly when you have this type of metastasizing hyperinflationary policy by any government. That's something that is the symptom of a terminal phase of corruption in a given political system. We've never been this badly off before in terms of this type of promiscuous inflationary conduct by the Federal Reserve. But there's no reason on earth why it wouldn't get this bad. I mean, once you accept the premise that a government central bank can create currency backed by nothing out of thin air, there's no reason why they shouldn't do this. It's just a question of how long it will take for them to get around to doing what we're seeing the Federal Reserve do now. The other thing that I find is really interesting, and this is something of a trend that I've commented before and I find really troubling, is this emerging theme in all of the government-connected media that all of these terrible things going on in the financial system and in the economy are the result of people who are simply too cheap.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You go right ahead, William.
Yep. The cover story of Newsweek, I believe it's this week's issue, we haven't gotten it out here in Idaho yet, has a picture of Uncle Sam pointing an imperious finger at the reader with the caption, "I want you to start spending." Now, that's a pretty good example of a theme that's been injected into a lot of mainstream media accounts of the economy recently. Namely, people need to open up their wallets and start spending, because if we don't, we're responsible for the crash of the economy. And that's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. We need to be saving. We need to be indulging very little of our desires for consumer goods, and doing what we can to economize, to rein in our spending, to gear down our standard of living in the interest of surviving some very rough times.
Well, you know, Chris, the paradox of where we are, William, is that certainly I agree with you totally in everything you say, if we were dealing with normal times. But unfortunately, if you were to put your money in the bank, as we're told, and my goodness, put your money in the bank, you have nothing to worry about, nobody's ever lost anything, well, they don't tell you about the ravages of inflation.
Yeah.
So you put your money in the bank, and they destroy it by the ravages of inflation. You'll get your money back even if the bank collapses.
Yeah.
But, of course, it may not buy you a hamburger. It may not even buy you, you know, a Coke at McDonald's. So understand that these are the most amazing times, and most people have never considered the fact that the dollar is no longer sound. The old idea, it's as sound as a dollar.
Yeah.
Well, the dollar used to be sound, but it isn't anymore, and there it's in the process of being destroyed by the subversive element in our government, specifically the Council on Foreign Relations, allowed to commission Bilderberg and the Chrysler Group of 30. Go right ahead.
Yeah, what you're pointing out is very, very true, of course. I mean, if you ask somebody how he's doing and you say, well, my health is as sound as a dollar, you expect the fellow to be in hospice care in the next couple of days. I mean, it's a terminal diagnosis if you say that my heart's as sound as a dollar. one of the really nasty things is that we do need to be keeping physical possession of the money that is being adulterated by inflation, precisely because at some point, I don't know when, it's going to be impossible to make significant withdrawals from our bank accounts, because all of the banks in this country are in principle insolvent. Just, I believe yesterday, Greenspan, the man who's done more than any human being in history to wreck our economy, was saying that the banking system needs a huge infusion of liquidity. That, of course, means more inflated dollars in order to retain its viability. Well, what he's trying to tell us is he's covering himself in the event that we do have an outright banking collapse and we have a so-called bank holiday and people can't get access even to the adulterated, badly debauched dollars that they have saved. People ought to be getting out of dollars, of course, but you do need to have possession of some dollars because they are still in circulation and still used to pay off certain obligations and to obtain certain necessary goods. But, of course, the really important thing you need to do, and this is something I will talk about for as long as I have a forum to do so, is you need to be getting into something with value, with something that will retain its value, gold and silver, of course, being the most important commodities that you can have, as well, of course, as it's necessary to provide for yourself with the type of comestible, storable staples of living, meaning the type of food storage that you could use even in such circumstances where there might be intermittent or intermittent interruptions in power or very long interruptions in the power grid. It's very important to keep food and water and other important commodities in quantity to provide for an emergency on the assumption that not only do you need them in order to survive, but they would be very useful should we have to resort to a barter economy of some duration. But with respect to retaining the value of what you've earned, you have to take care to make sure that you have not an investment size allotment, but a survival sized allotment of gold and silver, and to take care that you have physical possession of it and that you have the means to protect it if necessary, which is why I keep talking about the four noble metals, which are gold and silver and then lead and brass. We're at a point now where people are going to have to worry about preserving what they have from predators of all varieties, and that's why it's important that you keep those four noble metals in quantity. Just today, as a matter of fact, my mother and father purchased a rather large quantity of silver. My mother and father retired. My dad is 85 this year. My mother is 78 this year, and they're living on a fixed income, as most people in that age bracket do. But they withdrew a large amount out of their savings account, and they have been making the rounds and very quietly buying gold and silver, not because they want to have an investment that's diversified and inflation-proof, but because they don't want to be left holding nothing when we get hit with the reciprocal wave of price inflation as a result of the monetary inflation that's going on right now. There's just no way you can run the math if you take into account the factors that are visible right now in terms of public policy. There's no way you can run the math and come out with any conclusion other than the destruction of the dollar's purchasing value. And so people have to be prepared for this. This is not a discussion that we're having in the subjunctive tense, if this, then that. We're having this basically as a matter of imperative. Go and do this right away. We have to do this. This must be done, and it must be done very quickly. And so I would recommend that if people are interested in preserving the value what they've earned, and if they want to have something that can be used as a circulatable form of real money in the event of severe chaotic disruptions of the economy, your best bet is to go get pre-1965 U.S. Silver coinage. Get the half dollars and quarters and dimes. Those are very good. They retain their value very well. They can retain their investment value if that's how you want to approach this, or they can be used in the event of a fully orbed economic collapse at face value, several times their face value, depending upon how severely things turn out. And so that's one of the most important investments I would make in that realm. With respect to what else is going on in the economy that's likely to bring about these dire circumstances we're describing, we shouldn't forget, of course, that we still have foreign enemies. our most important enemies are in the government ruling us. They're the ones who do us the most damage. But there are still possibilities that we could find ourselves on the receiving end of some kind of foreign-based lethal mischief. I would believe, for instance, if we suffered a terrorist attack in this country, if it were legitimately a product of, say, radical groups in Pakistan or Afghanistan or Saudi Arabia or elsewhere, it likely would happen with at least the passive connivance of the government ruling us. And that's the very least you can say about what happened on 9/11. And this is a tendency that goes back all the way at least to Pearl Harbor. I mean, Pearl Harbor was an event that was in every relevant way precipitated by the Franklin administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I used to refer to Admiral Yamamoto as FDR's most important collaborator in the attack on Pearl Harbor. And that's the same type of a dynamic that would lead to a genuine terrorist attack somewhere in this country. If we had a terrorist attack of foreign provenance or a false flag event of some sort, that would have immediate economic consequences for the United States. That would probably lead to a situation of the sort that Gerald Celente, this very adept, very insightful futurist from New York, experienced on 9/11 when he tried to withdraw his money from various money market accounts. He found that he couldn't do that because those were financial accounts and Wall Street was closed that day. And when he went to withdraw a large sum of money from his bank, he was told that he couldn't withdraw the amounts that he needed, that it was illegal to withdraw the larger amounts that he was asking for. So he asked for smaller amounts, and he found that he had to be given them in large quantities of $20 bills, which made them all that much more vulnerable to theft. He was trying to get as much money as he could together in order to get out of New York and get over the border into Toronto. And he found that it was impossible to do that. It was impossible for him to withdraw the money from the bank accounts in a timely and efficient way. And he said, never again am I going to be left in a position where I have to be relying on a bank in a situation of crisis in order to get the money I need in order to protect myself. And so those of us who are seeking to protect ourselves need to do exactly the opposite of what our government is admonishing us to do right now. Mr. Obama, just a couple of weeks ago, said, well, Americans shouldn't be hoarding money under their mattresses. To me, that means that we should be hoarding our money under our mattresses, assuming we have the ability to protect our money there. Or we should put them in the equivalent of that type of a location and make sure that we have the means of protecting our money. We're seeing all these many messages coming out from the New York Times, from Newsweek, from Time Magazine, beating up on people they call hoarders. A hoarder is somebody who's simply trying to take responsible care of his money and his property and trying to make the optimal use and the longest use he can of what he has rather than going out and spending money on something that may be nice but is not entirely necessary. I made reference to my parents just a few minutes ago. My parents are hoarders. They were both born in or around the time of the Great Depression. They both went through the Great Depression as children. That left a lasting impression on them. They live by that old and very worthy credo that tells us that we should live with what we need and not really aspire to spend on something that we don't need. Use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without was the couplet that they lived by. And so in my childhood memories, I remember seeing a number of things that were decades old. Tools, clothes, books, all kinds of things that were perfectly useful. If you went to my dad's garage, you'd see plenty of items that could have been replaced by something that was newer and perhaps a little flashier. But he kept the older things because they did the job. He didn't really need to go out and invest in a brand new set of tools. The tools that he had as a teenager worked just fine. They didn't really throw anything away. My dad still has clothing and still has personal items that he received as gifts when I was a child 35, 40 years ago. He's made do with these things, not because he couldn't afford to go out and buy other things. It's just that there's no purpose in throwing something away when it was still useful. He could still get some use out of it. Well, that mindset, according to the mainstream media, is a pathological compulsive disorder. You actually see in the mainstream press where certain self-appointed psychological experts are saying that this is unhealthy behavior. It's a form of obsessive compulsive disorder, and it's really not a healthy thing if you're holding on to things a little bit too long, particularly when you're not public-spirited enough to open up your wallet and get the consumer economy going again. You have a patriotic duty to increase aggregate demand and not fall into what Lord Keynes called the paradox of thrift. These are the type of messages we're hearing right now. And all they're doing, of course, is vilifying those of us who are trying to survive as our government destroys the value of the currency that we earn and the value of what we've tried to save and put away. There's actually a news story from Great Britain that I read, I believe it was yesterday, where an economist over in the home country of the late and unlamented Lord Keynes was saying that there ought to be a radical price in, or excuse me, a radical tax increase applied to savings accounts, so as to give people a strong disincentive to save and to get them to spend money rather than keeping it. Now, you got to wonder about the staggering perversity of a mind that would suggest such a thing, that you would actually tax people punitively for trying to save. A couple of years ago in this country, our savings rate was in negative territory for the first time since the Great Depression. Now we're seeing it increase very quickly to over 5%. That's perfectly rational economic behavior. But rather than commending people for doing this, we're seeing where we're being blamed, those of us who are trying to save our money, are being blamed for the economic contraction as if we are responsible for this. The same people who mismanaged all these investment banks, by mismanagement, from a rational point of view, this would be called mismanagement, but the people who destroyed these investment banks and destroyed, I believe it was, I'm trying to remember the exact amount, but it destroyed trillions of dollars in wealth over the last year. I think $13 trillion in wealth was destroyed last year. The people responsible for this are excoriating those of us who no longer want to play that game and decide that those of us who want to decide that we want to retain primary stewardship of our own money. The people that created the crisis now are blaming those of us who are trying to survive the crisis for the situation that confronts us right now. And this will continue, and it will probably escalate because every time a government decides that it's going to destroy the currency, that's something that happened in the early years of the Soviet Union, and when it decides that it's going to take over the allocation of a society's resources on a political basis rather than letting the market allocate resources, which, of course, is what the Soviet Union and every collectivist state has ever done, anytime that happens, you end up with dislocations in the economy that result in shortages and starvation, food riots, widespread social chaos. So a government in a circumstance of that sort always resorts to scapegoating those who are not playing along with the program. They always scapegoat those who are trying to exercise the virtues of thrift and industry and who resent the confiscation of their wealth. In the Soviet Union, the kulaks, the so-called wealthy peasant farmers who resisted collectivization of the agriculture in Ukraine, were the objects, the hate objects of Soviet propaganda starting in the 1930s. And over the course of several years in that decade, the KGB systematically starved the kulaks to the point where over 10 million of them, by some estimates as high as 20 million, were killed through starvation, through disease, and through direct assault by Soviet military forces. You have the same kind of thing going on in Zimbabwe right now, where the white farmers, they're always called white farmers, the race is really a matter of indifference here. The people who owned the farms and had been successful in turning Rhodesia into the breadbasket of Africa, they were excoriated by the Zimbabwean Marxist regime for the same reasons the kulaks were in the Soviet Union. And they were driven off their farms. Many of them were killed by direct terrorism. And as a result, now you've got what had been the most prosperous economy in Africa, an exporting agricultural economy, blessed with incredibly fertile volcanic soil that goes several feet deep in some places. This place is a spectacle of incredible privation and violence and chaos. These are auguries of the type of situation we could see very quickly develop here in some parts of the United States, which is why, once again, the government ruling us is the last place we should look for wisdom. And I always tell people that if you wait until we're given permission by the government to panic, you've waited too long. By panic, I mean take decisive action right now on the assumption that everything is going to go to hell in a handcart. don't do this by way of frantic, undirected effort, but do this by way of acting in the interest of preserving yourself and your family. When the towers were about to fall, the ones who obeyed the instructions of the government rescue workers were the ones who died when the towers fell. The ones who jumped the queue and got out, you know, followed their best survival instincts are the ones who survived. And we're in a similar situation right now, up to and including, I contend, the systematic controlled implosion of our economy. You know, don't look to the saboteurs for wisdom as to how to survive the impact of their sabotage.
And I really believe that there are wicked people, many of them from the Trilateral Commission, control our economy, intent upon destroying the value of our currency. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Once again, Dr. Stan, thanks so much for the opportunity to be with you this evening. It's always a highlight of my week. It's a wonderful way to close out my week to spend some time talking with you, although we find ourselves immersed in such incredibly unpleasant subjects. You often say that these are really exciting times. They're exciting in the sense of being terrifying and being somewhat unpredictable.
Well, of course, it's coming from a Christian point of view. We recognize the spiritual forces, and so it really is. It is frightening, it's terrifying, and yet it's exciting because, of course, I believe we're seeing the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. But you go right ahead.
Yeah, once you understand what's going on, it's not nearly as scary as it is to somebody who just can't figure out why these things are happening. It really is the unknown that terrifies us. And so once you understand what's happening, once the ignorance has been dispelled, and you recognize what's happening, then your rational instincts take over, and you recognize that as bad as things get, at least you understand how these things happened, why these things happened, and how you can surmount the catastrophe that's unfolded. So hopefully what we're doing is we're helping people understand how we got here, who's responsible for the current mess we're in, and some idea of how we can at least deal with the unfolding catastrophe and try to restore and recover some of what's being taken from us. And I reiterate, the most important thing that people can do right now is to look to the immediate needs for physical survival for their families. And that, of course, means that if you have the means, get out of debt. If you don't have the means of getting out of debt, do what you can to bring your debts current and make sure that you are liquid. By liquid, I mean you have some cash on hand for immediate expenses, perhaps enough to cover at least a month or 2 months if possible, and then to have a large savings account that is not controlled by the banking system that is being used to rip us off. And that means primarily precious metals, gold and silver. The most important thing we can do, of course, is to take strength and comfort and solace for knowing that God remains sovereign, and to seek his will and to seek his help, and that involves some time on our knees. I like to say we should kneel and fight, that we should kneel and pray, and that we should stand and fight. These two things are thoroughly compatible. We need both. We need the humility to pray, and we need the resolution to fight. And I think that this is, as you say, Dr. Stan, the most exciting time in human history. It's going to be very, very unsettling. Men's hearts will fail them. But at least if we know how things are why things are unfolding the way they do, and how we should behave and to whom we should look, I think that our hearts will remain strong and resolute.
Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always one of the high points of my week as well when we have you as our guest. Good night, William, and we'll look forward to having you back with us
Thanks
next
so
week.
Thanks
Good
so
night.
God bless. God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with William Greek. I always do, and really understand we are in a terrible straits today. And what is happening financially is all part of long-range planning. It is the members of the Trilateral Commission, the subversive organization organized back in 1973 by David Rockefeller, who, according to the Barry Goldwater in page 280 of his book, With No Apologies, said that the purpose of the Trilateral Commission was international. It was to gain control of the financial and commercial interests of the world, in essence, by seizing control of the political government of the United States. It is not simply by accident that the foreign policy and domestic policy advisors, the President of the United States, are members of the Trilateral Commission, that his two chief financial advisors are members of the Trilateral Commission, and that the third, Larry Summers, comes from the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers. We have a great new syllabus. It's called the Membership List of the Council on Foreign Relations. It has treatises on these organizations, and then, of course, it has the membership list of the Group of 30, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission. We recommend it to you. It's something you will want to have and want to be able to utilize. And then, of course, we have my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, shame on you. You need to get it. If you want to understand what's really going on today and how the banks have pulled off this scam, and they say, oh, if we could just get them to loan. Well, ladies and gentlemen, they are loaning. They're loaning lots of money to India, to China, to Dubai, to Spain. They're just not lending it here in the United States because they want this collapse. They want to see the destruction of our economy and ultimately the destruction of our currency, because they position themselves in tangible assets. Don't think for 1 minute they haven't. It is simply that they want to impoverish the American people and bring chaos not only to our country but to the world. If you haven't read Henry Kissinger's January 12th, 2009 article in the International Herald Tribune, you need to get it. And if you don't have access to the internet, we'll be glad to send you one. That's the Henry Kissinger's January 12th, 2009 article in the International Herald Tribune, where he talks about how we have to have this one world order, international order, either that or face chaos. You need to get the book, The Coming Battle, written in 1889, the book, The Money Creators, written in 1935, the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which we think is the best single book available, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, or the book, Fiat Money Inflation in France. You need to get my little pamphlets on the history of money and the financial meltdown, my talk on the a financial tsunami with a syllabus, talk given some years ago, but everything we talked about then is coming to pass, only it's much worse. And first, you need to read my articles, November and December 2008, January 2009, and of course they will be in our new syllabus we're putting out on the financial Armageddon. It's not ready yet, but it will be probably within 10 days to 2 weeks, along with the talk on the financial Armageddon. And we'll have a new four-tape set or four-CD set on that subject very, very soon. We need you to get the information and help us to get it out. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. You need to get the DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. You want to get the DVD on Who Killed Bobby? They killed Bobby Kennedy. You want to get the four-tape set on the execution of Martin Luther King. The four-tape set on the execution of Bobby Kennedy. The two four-tape sets on the execution of President Kennedy. And then, of course, you need to get the other material that's available from Radio Liberty, say, on the plan to kill everybody, all of the American servicemen aboard the Liberty, and the survivors 20 years later were finally willing to come out. They no longer feared the government. They wanted to get the American people to know the plan was for all of them to be killed. So that, again, is the Liberty or the Liberty Special. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for revival in America.